This talk is about Wirelink. Wirelink is a thing that we have started adopting in systemd recently, and people might be wondering why. And I think we deserve, the community deserves a good answer to that question. I kind of hope that I can give that answer with this talk. So what's Wirelink? Has been around for a while, found some initial adoption, and then didn't find any adoption anymore. But now with systemd, we kind of are like, finally adopting it full time, and I hope that we're not going to be the only project there. It's a extremely simple IPC. It's ultimately, I can explain this to you in basically one slide. It's some JSON formatted formatted request over a SOC stream socket, terminated by a null byte, and then it gets a reply back, also JSON, terminated by a null byte. And that's really all there is to it. And now I wanted to close my laptop and just walk away because now you know everything. But I don't dare because, I don't know, maybe the projector doesn't recover from that. But yeah, of course, there is more to it. So there are specs on Wirelink.org about this. There are bindings available for all kinds of languages. Yeah, it has been around for quite a while, but initially was little adoption. What the fuck? Right now, everything on Linux, I guess, that does low-level system stuff kind of has relied on Dbus. Well, I mean, there's some areas where it's not used, but it's kind of universal for bigger system. It's okay for many users, but it has some serious limitations for others, and these limitations became visible already, like in the beginning when we started doing systemd, and we found some solutions. So systemd deeply integrates with Dbus, and that's not going to change anytime soon, but it's always like it's pain in some areas. So let's talk about Dbus, about the specific problems that I see there. So one of the big ones for systemd, the biggest one, I guess, is it's only available in late boot, right? Like there's Dbus daemon or Dbus broker or whatever Dbus implementation you're using. And that's a service that is started during late boot. That basically means during early boot, we want to do IPC2, but we can't really because, yeah, the bus is simply not up. Extending Dbus to early boot is not trivial, right? Like because in an early boot, much more than during late boot, it's always that various resources are not available just yet because the OS is still initializing. And that basically means you need some kind of scheduling, right? Like you need scheduling when you can make activation, you can allow activation. Something like this does not exist in Dbus. Like there have been proposals of maybe doing something about this, but it feels to me that Dbus is kind of stuck there. And because of the other problems that I'm going to talk about, I think it's not realistic to fix this problem. So it's too late for many, probably even more than half of the things that systemd does, right? Like because I don't know, I mentioned this in the session just before this one that networkd. I think one of the limiting things was that we don't have a Dbus API because Dbus comes so late. But it's everything else too. Systemd itself, resolved, all these things must be available during earliest boot already, and then makes Dbus a really problematic choice. Systemd's way out so far was that we tried to be our own little Dbus daemon, right? Like PID1 is its own Dbus daemon, has this private socket where it speaks a Dbus protocol, and this is what other people do too, and I fucking hate it. Because it's like, it's like Dbus, but not using Dbus, because it uses the Dbus serialization, but doesn't do all the concepts that Dbus traditionally does, which is, signal matching and things like this. Because there is no broker on the other side, but just some, you're talking directly to PID1, all these things don't make any sense. So in SDbus, for example, the library that we use, there's all these special cases. Are we talking of a direct connection? Then we do not need to install a match handle. If it is a real broker, then we have to do this. So, I don't know, it always feels wrong, right? Like you take Dbus and then you rip out, probably 80% of the concepts, and just you something remains, and you try to make it work, but also, I don't know. So the serialization is used, subsets of the header fields, but otherwise quite different. No matches, no name protocol, no peer-to-peer communication, and things like this. One other major issue that always was painful for us is, it cannot used for many basic IPC servers. The ones that Dbus daemon or Dbus broker themselves want to talk to. These are, for example, user resolution services, right? Like we have UserDBD, for example, on systemd, and like quite a few sources nowadays where users where user definitions come from. And when DBAS initializes, wants to resolve all users basically that are listed in the policy. And for that, it wants does glibc NSS, and that again then needs to do IPC. And in the initial versions, the system we implemented that via DBAS because this problem wasn't that clear to us yet. And then we realized, oh my god, this creates a cyclic loop, right? Like DBAS uses NSS, which uses DBAS, and there you have your dad log. So it's a mess, right? This is not just for user resolution, it's also for logging, right? Like talking to syslog. There's a reason why everybody uses direct communication for syslog, but this then propagates, right? Like that also means that our logging team and journal D can never do DBus, right? Like because it would be DBurs that synchronously logs to journal D, and if journal D itself talks to DBurs to register its name and things like this, then you have again your cyclic dependency. And yeah, we ran into these issues in other contexts, but it's like, yeah, it's simply that DBAS is already too late, and IPC is something that should be really, really basic, I'm sure, that always works. A couple of other problems, like one of them is you cannot use it to stream data, right? It's not supposed to be that, right? Like it's supposed to be this control protocol where you just send short messages that say start this, stop this, and things like this. But the world ultimately is not like that. Sometimes you need to enumerate stuff, and that is already pretty messy with DBAS because you cannot stream actual data with it. So that basically means you have to make sure that you don't stream too much, because if you stream too much, then DBAS will kick you off the bus because you keep flooding it with messages, right? So this pushes people towards a certain way of designing their APIs, right? Like, for example, in systemd, this means basically there's one call list units, and that only returns like basically short, like a really short summary and a handle to the unit, and then you have to individually ask the information about all the units to get the full data. This is inefficient because it involves round trips and things like this, and it's just messy because it's also not atomic and these kind of things, right? Like you never are able to get over DBAS an atomic idea of what's actually going on in systemd, because yeah, we can't do it. And DBAS by design, if we would try it, would kick us off the bus. People ran into this all the time, like in systemd, for example. This is something easily triggerable. If you do the system control dump thing, like it's like a debug command that basically gives you a text description, like human readable text description, what's currently going on in PID1. This thing can get large on large installations, and was like initially we just sent that as a DBAS string over, and DBAS kicked systemd off the bus. So we then added the side channel, it was memfd and whatnot, and that's what people tend to do, right? Like they figure out, okay, we can't use DBAS for these things, so we have to have that side channel if it's actually a proper data there. And it's messy because, you know, this stuff that I was just talking about, that is actually in my philosophical looking at the problem, that's control, that's not data, that's control, it should work. Verlang doesn't have that problem. You can scale as much stuff through, like push as much stuff through there as you want, and that basically means like, yeah, if you want to have a dump of all the units with all the state, it will give you this, and it will do this in a reasonably atomic fashion. So that's a massive improvement, I think. Yeah, so it's also slow, you know, because in DBAS it's like this thing where you have the broker, and every message from any process to any other process always goes through the broker. And this is like, this basically means that every round trip, first of all, requires four context switches. And context switches, like meaning from the sender to the broker, from the broker to the recipient, from the recipient to the broker, and from the broker back to the client. These round trips are awful enough, but if we have to do for every round trip actually four context switches, this is really bad. Because, you know, people misunderstand like what actually makes a system slow. It's the round trips that kill everything. It's not like, I don't know, time you waste on additional marshalling for JSON, which is another slide I have later. So yeah, it is a problem. It's unnecessarily slow, and particularly if you actually want to exchange a lot of data. Yeah, there's another problem, I think. The security model is kind of garbage. Like, it has this XML language where you're supposed to individually control in a static fashion access to individual methods. In reality, nobody's really using that anymore. Like, everybody just has really, like, they just basically control shall it be public or not per method, and that's kind of it. And then there's a little bit of more useful access control, like who's allowed to own a dbus name and things like this. But like, it has this intricate language that is not useful, in particular because on the desktop, for example, you're tend to want to have some interactive component in there, like PolicyKit, and that's what everybody ends up using. And even on us, on the enterprise-y, like Azure-y things, we actually use PolKit there because we need more complex policies. So yeah, security model, I think, is useless to the point that I think it shouldn't probably exist at all. They all use PolicyKit anywhere. This makes, of course, everything even worse because it basically means you then have to talk to PolKit, which probably is fine, by the way, but it also means that you now have for every system level interaction, you already have six more process context switches, because suddenly it's the individual backends that need to talk to PolicyKit, which is again like goes via the broker and then the reply back to the broker. So summary, it's performance is not great. And a couple of other things, like, I mean, I can go on shitting all over dbus. I like to think that I know dbus quite well. I worked with a long time. I have many commits in dbus daemon. I have implemented the client library in as dbus. Dbus at this time, I think it was 17 years old or something. I think right now, I don't know. I know what the problems are. One thing, for example, that I really don't like is the fact is that, you know, they typically when you do IPC, you have this pattern where you go to some service and allocate an object there, and then you subscribe to changes from that object. In dbus, it's inherently racy to do this, right? Like, because if you do this, you first do your dbus call to the other side, the object is created, but now you need to subscribe to the signals about it, right? Like, so that you actually get the notification. So what do? You go, then go to the broker and ask for the signal subscription. But this creates a window where the object existed, but the signals are not delivered to you yet because the match is not installed yet. And this is messy because it basically means you have to create the object, you install the signal, and then you have to ask again, did anything change in the meantime while I wasn't watching? And that's just bad because it's such a common pattern. Then there's a stuttering thing, you know, like, you know, we had these attempts to add KDBus to the kernel and things like this. What people who are not at home and dbus always complain about is this, what some people call stuttering, and I think that kind of makes sense. It's like if you look at a dbus call in code or from the command line, you always see that it kind of repeats the same strings in the command line. Like, it's, you'd call org.freedesktop.systemd, and then you call the object slash org.freedesktop.systemd, and then you call the interface org.freedesktop.systemd. So you basically wrote the same string at least three times into the same command line, and people like feel that's kind of stuttering, right? Like, it's repeating the same string. They are different concepts, absolutely, but this is hard for people to understand. It creates a learning curve, and an unnecessary one, as I think. And there's so much more. We don't have that much time, so I'm not gonna go into all of this. But it's like, yeah, look at the slides later. There's so many problems with this. I already explained what Varlink is. Varlink also has problems. Like, everything has problems. Like, first of all, it's using JSON. JSON for system level stuff comes with this problem that JSON is traditionally not 64-bit clean, right? It inherits, like, it comes from JavaScript, and in JavaScript, everything is a float. And that basically means they don't have a native integer support, and that basically means that most of the implementations of JSON kind of agreed that you should not use rely on 64 integers to be available, and instead limit yourself to 52-bit, because that's what, like, is the mantissa of 32-bit, of 64-bit floating point numbers. So it's only like an accurate mapping from integers to float if you limit yourself to 52-bit. This is the well-known problem. There have been RFCs that deal with that problem, like, and that basically tell everybody just use 52-bit and the problem is okay. I think it is a problem for low-level stuff, but I don't think it's a big problem, actually, because, like, at least in systemd, you know, because dbus doesn't have a nullable concept, right? Like, fields cannot be left empty or something like this. People ended up using, let's say they have a 64-bit integer, then used either 0 or uint46 max as the special value that is supposed to indicate the niche value null. In systemd, we do that all the time, by the way. But the thing is, in JSON, you actually do have a proper null type. So you do not have to actually rely on this, right? Like, you can just use a proper null, then you don't need the special meaning of uint64 max to indicate this. And as it turns out, most of the resources that we manage on systems that actually are large are not quite large as 64-bit integers. So I think it's not a big problem that people think it is. Also, in the system implementation of Varlink, we, and this is what many people do, we are just fine with when an application asks for a 64-bit integer, we are fine to either parse it as a 64-bit integer, but also as a string, like people can encode this in string, which is what many people in the industry do, and hence I don't think it's a problem. Also, JSON is, of course, the marshalling is a little bit bigger and a little bit slower to generate, right? Like than the compact stuff that Dbus marshalling does. I don't know, like Zeeshan, if he's here, he did some analysis about this because he doesn't believe me that this actually matters. Like I said, it doesn't. He did, said it does. So it's like 40% slower or something for large objects, right? Like you have to have them really large to actually hit this. I don't think, yeah, I mean, given that Dbus isn't really useful for large objects, I'm not that concerned. But if you are content about this, you need to focus, like figure out what your priorities are. Because, you know, the thing that makes Dbus slow is not the marshalling or something like this, or that makes Varlink slow is not the marshalling. It's always about the round trips. The round trips kill you. It's not the slightly wasteful marshalling that JSON is. And it's so useful that it's JSON, because for the first time, if I S-trace a systemy system, I can actually make sense of the IPC calls being done. And this alone is like one of the killer features of Varlink, that you actually fucking understand your own system nowadays. So I don't have that much time because the time slot is so short. And we want to do questions. I want to do one more thing. I don't know if I find the right slide very quickly. Oh, it's right here. One of the massive benefits of Varlink that I still want to use my time for to emphasizing is, you know, in systemd, we wanted to add a Dbus services, Dbus API, for many of our components. Like, for example, boot control, like this little tool that allows you to install a bootloader. It's a tool that is inherently necessary to get your system running, but it's also a tool that you will almost never call except when you install your system, right? So there was always this plan, and was in the to-do file, to add a Dbus service. And it would have been painful, because Dbus pushes you into this model that you have a multiplex connection, right? Like, you have one connection to the broker, and that's where you receive all your message calls from, and you're supposed to process them all in parallel. But this means that your programs need to be actually asynchronous in that regard, right? And must be able to process multiple requests at the same time. In Varlink, this problem is solved. You know, we have all these little tools like boot control, which are kind of synchronous, right? Like, you give them a command, they execute the command, they exit, done, right? Now, with Varlink, we can do this really nice thing. You know, these tools tend to, like we had this in the prior talk, like they nowadays tend to give us output already JSON, right? So what Varlink kind of does is it adds one more thing that you can also to give the command, like as input for these tools, encode things in JSON, so that you basically say, S to the in, you get a little bit of JSON. S to the out, you generate a little bit of JSON. And then you use systemd socket activation to bind it to a socket. And suddenly, you have actually really good IPC API for a completely synchronous tool, right? Like, because you use socket activation with the mode where accept equals yes, which basically means the systemd can automatically fork off multiple instances of multiple requests come in. So, and I think this is an absolute killer feature, right? Like, because it suddenly makes it feasible and easy for all these little synchronous tools that we have, like, for example, in Utah Linux, like half a ton of them, like LOC setup, fdisk, and these kind of things, and the systemd, the same thing. Like, all these little synchronous tools could very easily, trivially, without changing the whole structure from a simple, static, isolated thing into this massive monster of dynamic, parallel, asynchronous behavior into IPC service. And I think everybody would benefit from this. So to me personally, it took me a while to realize how awesome this is. But in systemd, once I realized this, I added like to PCR lock to a couple of other things, Varlink services suddenly, because it was so easy, right? Like, didn't have to restructure the programs to be asynchronous and have an event loop and blah, blah, blah. I could just read my method call from standard input and give my reply on standard output. So anyway, maybe we have 1 minute or something.
We have 5 minutes for a question.
Oh, we actually do have 5 minutes. So
Okay, first, before question, let me just say, I mean, Dibos has many problems, like every technology, but we greatly appreciate the work that, you know, David and Simon do, Dibos Bokeh Maintainer, Dibos Demo Maintainer, and we are very appreciative of their work.
How are the interfaces defined? What's the type safety story when they use JSON?
Sorry?
Dibos, we have pretty... you can define the data types of your fields, right? What is the type safety story?
So there's an IDL language in Varlink where you basically can say it's a lot richer than what Dibos ever had, because it knows structures and enums, which is kind of the thing that we use all the time in systemd for over the bus, but we don't have those types, so it's kind of always a little bit like there's a lot of type info involved, but it's not useful to the reader, because you can't even recognize enums and structs in this. But it's way better, right? Like in the IDL language. Do I have a nice example? I could probably show you later on the on my laptop, like how this looks like. But it's very readable, right? Like, because you know the problem with IDL in Dibos in particular, and this type safety, is that it's like it's not clear why the IDL exists. Like, what's the audience of the IDL in Dibos? Is it for language binding so that they can add some type safety automatically, or is the audience users, like humans, to read it and understand this? In Varlink, we try to figure, like, say our model is clearly that it's supposed to be human readable, right? Like, it's supposed to look nice, so it's not fucking XML or something like this. I hope that's it's better. It's just a short summary.
Other questions?
Behind you.
Oh, it's behind you.
So, do you think, I haven't really heard of Varlink before this. Do you think Varlink is like a replacement for Dibos entirely? Like, do you think all of user space should be using Varlink, or do you think Dibos still has like a place to exist?
It's a good question. I have a slide about this. It's, again, like, because the slot is so short, we didn't come to, but anyway, so I think the summary at this point is, like, semantically, I think Varlink has, like, as good as it could possibly get, and I'm not aware of any, like, besides the one, the 64-bit integer thing on Varlink, I don't see any, like, any point where Varlink would be worse than Dibos.
I have one.
What Dibos has going forward is, though, it's universally adopted, right? Like, I don't know, Flatpak has a proxy for this and things like this. That is valid something, right? That you have language support in almost everything. So, but I personally think, in my systemd point of view, I think we continue going to support Dibos and going to continue extending that. But for new stuff, I kind of see that we're probably going to do more Varlink stuff. So in future, there's going to be both. But I personally, from my low-level system point of view, I think Varlink is the way to go.
So there is one thing that Dibos does better, which is discoverability. So I can do busctl and I see everything that's available there. For Varlink, it's random sockets.
I have some ideas about that problem. I think the Linux kernel kind of gives you help with this, because you can do cat proc net Unix, right? And then if it's a reverse domain notation thing, and one thing I want from the kernel is that we can attach extended attributes on these AF Unix inodes, and then we could actually implement in Varlink control a really nice list of all the sockets that are Varlink sockets, basically, and you can connect to this. And it's not maintained by us, it's maintained by the kernel, and that's so much more lovely. Why?
So I've got a question about using the Varlink mechanism to turn a basic synchronous program into a socket activatable one. Does systemd guarantee some kind of back pressure? Otherwise, you could just keep spamming and essentially...
The connections are, like, because it's brokerless, right? Like, there's always direct connections. It's a job for your event loop to schedule this. Right?
It means the socket. Can you?
Yeah, so because can I basically pressure systemd into accepting more and more sockets until eventually it runs out because my program isn't responding or something like that?
Templated, but
It means templated units. So this is templated, no, so you can start 10 million. But we have rate limits, right?
If I added to templated units, like we always had this thing in there for IP connections that we maintain how many connections came in per IP address, and I extended this so that on AF Unix sockets, we now keep track of how many connections came in per user. So yes, you can probably, if you send too many things in parallel, do a soft DOS, from which we will hopefully eventually recover once you stop doing this. But you cannot trigger this from a single user, because yeah, we have the per user concurrent limit on things. So I think it's kind of same as DBus.
Do you have an idea to implement service introspection in Varling? That's like next level to what Luca said, that you have you can list services, but you can also see what they implement.
Yes and no. So, like, there is introspection for interfaces, but because there's no object tree or anything like this, because, you know, one of these other things that I think are really weird in DBus is that it forces on you these DBus object path, which are like a synthetic identifier, which kind of means always that in DBus, everybody has their own identifiers, and then that needs to turn them into DBus object path, and then always back. And you always have to have an explicit method call to supply this, which also again means additional round trips and things like that. Varling doesn't do this, right? Like, Varling assumes that you use your own identifiers, the native ones that you have. But this also implies that there is no enumeration of objects, because there are no objects; they're just method calls. So we do have introspection for everything. But because there is no object concept, you cannot enumerate objects. You can enumerate interfaces.
Is there some auth included, or authentication authorization, so that the process knows if it's root or some guest user asking?
The in DBus, the authentication is kind of weird, because it has like it's actually two protocols. Like, there's the authentication protocol, and then we switch to the actual DBus protocol. And it's always weird, because on Linux we don't need this, right? On Linux the authentication happens by IF Unix, and that is the answer here too. In Varlink does not define authentication protocol, because the assumption is that if you do authentication, you do it out of protocol. Via the side channel that you have, which is
and we use it with Varling, with Polkit, right?
We hooked it up to Polkit, so you can even use it like this. And if you want to use it over HTTP or something like this, which is very natural, because this is response request based, it's very natural to port it on top of HTTP. Then this would be the job for your HTTP implementation to deal with. But Varling will not help you in this. It assumes that the layers below deal with that
problem. Yeah, thank you very much, Leonard. We're out of time.